4. Lydia. The gates to Mudare stood open as they approached, soft flakes of snow drifting from the sky to add to the carpet of white. It should have been beautiful, but with the endless streams of black crisscrossing the land, the stench of rot thick on the air, it looked for all the world to Lydia like the flesh of one infected by the blight. Or a blighter, as she'd learned they were called during their journey back from the battleground of Alder's Ford. The soft thuds of the horses' hooves turned to sharp clacks as they rode under the open portcullises and onto the cobbles, not a single sentry remaining to guard the city. The door to a house opened and shut on the wind, the hinges creaking and the shutters on the windows rattled with each gust. Where Mudare had once been thick with the scents of humanity, food and sweat and urine, now there was only rot, as though the city itself was a corpse laid out to decay. And yet it was not entirely lifeless. Lydia noted human tracks in the snow, far too many to be accounted for by a handful of individuals, and she turned to Quindor, who rode silently at her side. As Grand Master of Hegiria's temple, he had authority over all healers in Mudamora and the ear of the king. He'd have answers. "I thought Lady Calorian was able to evacuate the city." Her chest hitched at the mention of Killian's mother, her mind leaping to him as it so often had over the days since she'd turned her back on him at Alder's Ford. Quindor's gaze flicked to the tracks, his jaw tightening.
"There were a good many who refused to go, and there wasn't the manpower to force them. With the battle won, we anticipate more will return."
"Why would anyone in their right mind stay?" There was nothing to eat but vermin and what fish could be caught on the sea, and the majority of the wells in the city were foul.
"Hope? Stubbornness? Fear?"
His eyes moved to the shadows, and Lydia's went with them, catching sight of motion, of something human in shape. Her chest tightened, especially when she realized it was following them.
"Blighter,"
Quindor said softly to the soldiers.
"Would you have me put it down, Grandmaster?"
one of the men replied.
"Or do you wish it captured?"
Before Quindor could answer, it stepped out of the shadows.
"Spare a copper?"
the child said, her voice high-pitched and sweet.
"A crust of bread?"
Instinct had Lydia reaching for her saddlebags to retrieve the girl something to eat. But Quindor caught hold of her wrist.
"Look,"
he said.
"Allow Hegiria's mark to show you the truth."
Lydia turned her head back to the child, seeing that the girl's dark eyes were fixed on her. Her skin was pale, but her face bore none of the black veins of blight that marred the flesh of the infected who'd attacked the night of Malahai's ball. Neither was she a mindless thing like those that had pursued them through the tunnels beneath the palace, intent on nothing but slaughter. There was intelligence in this girl's eyes. Thought.
"Look,"
Quindor repeated. Lydia stared back into the eyes of the child, her skin turning to ice. All living creatures glowed with an ethereal mist of life that only those marked by Hegiria could see. Quindor and the soldiers, as well as the horses, radiated it. But the girl standing before them had no more life in her than the stones beneath her feet. A walking corpse.
"The blight is evolving,"
Quindor said. Then he nodded at the guard.
"Put it down."
"No!" Lydia protested, but the Grand Master grabbed the reins of her horse to keep her from intervening as the soldier pulled his sword. The girl's eyes widened with fear, and she turned and sprinted toward an alley. But the soldier's horse was faster. A flash of a blade, a gush of blood, a child's head rolling across the snow.
"Burn it."
Quindor's voice was toneless. Another of the soldiers dismounted to pour oil over the corpse, including the head, and then touched his torch to it. Flames burst bright. Nausea rose in Lydia's stomach, her skin simultaneously hot and cold. But Quindor's words tore her eyes from the sight.
"The war isn't over," he said. "It has only just begun. And this,"
he gestured at the inferno,
"is a battle Hegiria's marked must fight."
His gaze fixed on hers.
"That's why you are here."
They dismounted in the middle of the city's god circle, and several of the soldiers took the reins of the horses to bring them to the stables at the palace, the only place secure enough to protect them from slaughter. The doors to the temple opened as they approached, heavily armed soldiers in the company of two young healers inspecting their party before they were allowed to enter. "Welcome back, Grandmaster," both of the young healers said, inclining their heads respectfully, and Quindor smiled affectionately at both as he led Lydia inside. The last time she'd been here was to deliver Gwen into the temple's care, and the scene was much changed. Instead of the foyer being filled with rows of cots, it was empty of everything except for soldiers, all of the men wearing coats marked with Hegiria's half-moon. What windows the main level had once possessed had been bricked over. The temple was now a fortress. "Do the blighters try to get inside?" she asked, heart beating a rapid staccato as she remembered the waves of them tumbling through the trapdoor into the palace tunnels, their endless pursuit.
"Not yet," the young healer answered. "But Hegiria's marked alone see them for what they are, so it's in their best interest to kill us. We think they're waiting for an opportune moment."
"Shush now," Quindor said. "I'd hear a proper report, not inflated rumors. Come, Lydia. I'll show you to your quarters, and after you've had a chance to settle, we will discuss the matter of the infected."
The blight is evolving. Quindor's words echoed through her thoughts as she followed him to a curved staircase, leading her upward. They climbed to the fifth floor before turning down a hallway which circled the tower.
"The dormitories," he said,
then led her past a dozen closed doors before stopping before one marked with a 37.
"This will be your room. You are responsible for keeping it clean and for your own laundry. Attend me in my office in an hour or so that we might discuss your role."
"Yes, Grandmaster,"
she answered, but Quindor was already swiftly retreating up the corridor, so she went inside. It was small, more cell than room, in her opinion, with a narrow cot against the wall, a rickety wardrobe against the other, as well as a wash table on which a basin filled with water sat. The gray stone of the floor was softened only by the presence of a threadbare carpet, but the blankets on the bed appeared soft and warm. A set of folded white garments sat on the blankets, and Lydia picked them up. A thick robe, a white cotton shift, a woven belt, and on the floor, three pairs of black boots of various sizes. Lydia methodically stripped off her dirty clothing, leaving it in a pile. Goosebumps rose on her skin as she crossed the frigid floor to stand naked in front of the wash table. There was a mirror on the wall, nothing more than a polished piece of metal, and Lydia stared at her reflection. Her hair was tangled and filthy, her skin marked with dirt. And beneath the filth, her cheeks were hollow, her eyes shadowed and sunken from exhaustion and fear and grief. But what drew her eye was the half moon that Quindor himself had tattooed onto her forehead during the journey back from Alder's Ford. This was the first time she'd seen it, and she traced a fingernail over the design, reminded briefly of how the Empire marked the men in its legions. And thought of the legions pulled Teriana into the forefront of her mind. Her best friend, who was the prisoner of the young man who'd tried to murder Lydia on Lucius Cassius's orders. "Please watch over her,"
she prayed to the six.
Don't let him hurt her.
Pouring water into the basin, she picked up the cloth and bar of soap sitting next to it and began to scrub her face, then her body, the water turning a murky brown. She discarded the dirty water into the chamber pot under the cot, then refilled the basin. Bending forward, she immersed her hair as best she could, pinching her eyes shut as she worked up a soapy lather and then pouring the rest of the pitcher of water over her head to rinse it. Reaching blindly for a towel, she wiped her face and wrapped her damp hair. And then she opened her eyes and reached for the basin. The water wasn't the murky brown of dirt, but rather a deep shade of rust. Blood. Killian's blood. Her breathing accelerated, turning into fast little gasps, the room swimming in and out of focus. She crouched down, pressing her hands to the floor for balance, shivering violently, her skin like ice.
"He's alive," she whispered. "You're alive, and both of you are set to the purposes for which you were destined."
But the truth did nothing to drive away the cold.